Section 2, Governing from Afar. As you read, look for the failure of mercantilism in the colony of Louisiana, successes and failures of Antoine Crozet's proprietorship, how the company era produced a ruinous stock bubble, the restoration of royal rule, and the final days of Bienville in Louisiana. Terms: proprietorship, indigo, calumet, joint stock company, Mississippi bubble. Louisiana's origins were based on the search for a new trade route to the east, perhaps to China or India, which the French hoped would lead to riches. When that did not turn out to be the case, France did not give up the dream of making Louisiana a colony that could contribute to their national wealth. At this time, European powers that established colonies in the New World implemented the economic system called mercantilism. Mercantilist theory required that the colonies of a given nation trade only with the mother country. The colony's role in the economic system was to provide valuable raw materials back to the founding nation. Ideally, the European nations hoped to find precious metals like gold and silver. Failing this, they hoped to profit from the raw materials they found. In Louisiana, the earliest and most profitable raw materials shipped back to France included timber and animal pelts. Despite these exports, the Louisiana colony was not making a profit. The crown decided to try something new. Proprietorship. France was experiencing severe economic problems because of high royal expenditures and years of warfare with Spain and England. The Louisiana colony quickly became a financial burden rather than a profit-making enterprise. Even so, the French knew they needed to maintain the Louisiana claim to keep the English and Spanish from establishing colonies there. King Louis XIV settled on the idea of proprietorship, the system of letting an individual businessman take control of the colony in hopes that he could make it profitable. The arrangement offered a contract to one person who assumed responsibility for the colony. In return for economic control and a large portion of any profits he could make, the proprietor agreed to send settlers to Louisiana, provide supplies for the colony, and make certain that French laws were enacted and observed. A French nobleman named Antoine Crozet agreed to accept the proprietorship of Louisiana in late 1712. Crozet had no intention of going to Louisiana himself. Instead, he appointed a colonial governor who he believed had the ability to make Louisiana profitable. His choice was an experienced colonial administrator named Antoine de Lamotte, Sieur de la Cadillac. Cadillac had migrated from France to Canada in the hopes of making his fortune. He served in the French army at several colonial outposts and established a city he named Detroit in 1701. Bienville transferred authority to Cadillac in 1713 and turned his attention to military affairs. Cadillac had many successes as the first person to officially hold the title of governor of Louisiana. The expansion of settlements to different parts of the colony is his most lasting contribution. By this time, the main Louisiana settlement had shifted from Fort Louis to the nearby site of present-day Mobile, Alabama. But Cadillac thought settlement should be expanded further upriver and in the direction of Spanish settlements to the west. Saint Denis and the founding of Natchitoches. Cadillac ordered a colonist named Louis Juchereau de Saint Denis to establish an outpost on the banks of the Red River. In 1714, Saint Denis established Fort Saint Jean Baptiste, which became the city of Natchitoches, named for a nearby Caddo tribe. Under the system of mercantilism, it was technically illegal for French settlers to trade with the Spanish, but the realities of receiving so few supplies actually encouraged it. Saint Denis organized an expedition into nearby Spanish territory in the hopes of establishing informal trading relationships with Spanish outposts. Saint Denis had numerous adventures while in Spanish territory. At one point, he was jailed. At another point, the Spanish viceroy, the governor of a country or province who represents the king, in Mexico City ordered him to accompany a Spanish expedition to build forts along the border between Louisiana and Texas. Saint Denis even married the granddaughter of a Spanish commandant. In the course of his adventures, Saint Denis established a trading relationship with Spanish outposts. The Spanish had horses and cattle to trade. The French offered supplies like guns, ammunition, knives, and medicine in return. The Spanish could pay for these items with silver, which the French greatly desired. This kind of irregular trade became a common feature of life in remote outposts like Natchitoches. It made some people like St. Denis quite wealthy. Illegal trade also began to take hold in the colony's main settlements in Biloxi and Mobile, although it was harder to accomplish there. When New Orleans was founded in 1718, it too became a site of extensive illegal trade. Problems in the colony. The growth of illegal trade was not Cadillac's main problem. In fact, in some cases, as with St. Denis, he quietly encouraged it. Yet he also continued to seek legal ways to make the colony profitable. Cadillac was the first to promote the cultivation of tobacco and indigo, a plant that is used to make blue dye. He hoped he could sell indigo back to France for profit. He and his first commissary commissioner also encouraged the colonists to establish small farms to increase the supply of locally produced food. Many colonists were willing to take grants of land, but most of them had no agricultural experience and had little success as farmers. At first, Cadillac made efforts to work well with his business manager and with Bienville. Over time, however, intense infighting developed among the men. Many of these disagreements were caused by the overlapping areas of authority each man claimed. Cadillac also had a reputation for being blunt and lacking tact. Unlike Bienville, who had gone to great effort to learn native languages and customs, Cadillac considered the Indians his inferiors. Whether he meant to or not, he often insulted or offended tribal leaders. On one occasion, his refusal to smoke the calumet, a ceremonial pipe, caused great offense. The Native Americans interpreted Cadillac's refusal not only as a sign of disrespect, but also as an insult that was so serious it could lead to war. As with Bienville before him, colonists and other leaders wrote numerous letters of complaint back to France. In 1716, Crozat brought Cadillac back to France and sent a second governor to replace him. But he served less than a year before Crozat surrendered the unprofitable colony back to the crown. Crozat's opportunity to rid himself of the colony arose when Louis XIV died in 1715. The great-grandson who would become Louis XV was only 5 years old at the time. Until he could perform his royal duties, an advisory council called the Regency ruled for him. The Duke of Orléans led the Regency Council. When Crozat asked to be relieved of his proprietorship, the Regency and Colonial Council agreed. In late 1717, Crozat's 5-year proprietorship ended, and France was left looking for yet another way to administer Louisiana. The Company Era. Crozat's financial losses in Louisiana were well known, and the Regency had difficulty finding a single proprietor willing to risk his fortune. Instead, the Crown, in conjunction with a financier named John Law, devised a joint stock company to take control of Louisiana. A joint stock company was an early form of the modern corporation in which many people invested by buying stock. John Law was a Scotsman who had settled in France and had impressed the Duke of Orléans with his financial knowledge. The Regency gave him permission to organize the first Bank of France in 1716. The following year, Law created the Company of the West to take charge of the Louisiana colony. By 1718, Law had created a second company named the Company of the Indies. Many people just called it the Mississippi Company. This new company absorbed the Company of the West and, in the process, took responsibility for Louisiana. A bursting bubble. Law planned to get the funds to develop Louisiana by selling shares in these joint stock companies. In its early years, the Company of the Indies generated large profits, and many people wanted to invest. Their reasons for doing so had little to do with Louisiana itself. The desire to get rich quick created a mania, excessive enthusiasm, for buying shares in the company. The price of the shares began to rise along with the number of investors. The rapid rise in the value of the company's stocks created a nickname for the process. It was called the Mississippi Bubble. As long as that bubble of investors continued to expand, profits rose. Early investors made very large profits, but as expenses in Louisiana grew, it became hard to maintain profits for the company's stockholders. By 1720, it became difficult just to pay back initial investments. rumors of financial difficulties grew, and worried investors began to demand payments in cash. John Law and others had to admit that the company did not have the funds on hand to pay its investors, let alone to continue investing so heavily in the development of Louisiana. Stock prices began to fall precipitously or steeply. By the end of 1721, shares in the Company of the Indies were all but worthless. In other words, the Mississippi bubble had burst. Many investors, including John Law himself, lost their personal fortunes. Law had to flee France in disgrace, and Louisiana's reputation suffered. The founding of New Orleans. The Company of the Indies was reorganized after Law's failure and remained in charge of the colony throughout the 1720s. During those years, the population of Louisiana grew slowly and important developments took place. In 1718, Law and others had allowed Bienville to fulfill one of his dreams and establish a city on the banks of the Mississippi River. Bienville believed that in time it would become a bustling city and thriving port. Bienville named the city New Orleans in honor of the Duke of Orleans. Despite Bienville's grand dreams, the first months and years of the city's existence were difficult. In 1723, a great hurricane destroyed the city's crops and most of its buildings. Though its progress was slow, New Orleans eventually became the thriving, wealthy city Bienville hoped. He, however, did not fare so well in the short term. The same kind of bureaucratic infighting that had existed in the early years continued. Accusations of mismanagement resulted in Bienville's recall to France in 1724. He would remain in France for the next 7 years, defending his actions. Territorial expansion. In Bienville's absence, the territory continued to expand. The company had established an outpost in 1722 called Baton Rouge. The following year, company employees began developing a post on the Red River named Poste du Rapides. In time, it would become the city of Alexandria. Territorial expansion was a sign of progress, but it also created further tensions with Native Americans. As we learned in Chapter 5, French attempts to order the Natchez off their land so company officers could turn the area into a tobacco plantation resulted in the Natchez Uprising of 1729. Although the Natchez succeeded in their surprise attack on the colonists, their victory was brief. In the next 2 years, French soldiers pursued and defeated the remaining Natchez. The fear created by the Natchez massacre of settlers led many people to abandon their land claims and return to the safety of New Orleans. 10 years after the Mississippi bubble burst, the Company of the Indies returned the colony to the control of the king in 1731. The final years of French colonial rule. Louis XV had been crowned king in 1722 at the age of 12, but he had a series of advisors who continued to help him rule France. In 1732, Louis XV and his advisors asked Bienville to return to Louisiana once more, this time as the colony's official governor. Bienville saw this as a way to finally redeem his reputation. Louis XV and others saw Bienville as a good choice because of his firsthand knowledge of Louisiana and his expertise in dealing with the native people. The Natchez Uprising led to open warfare and damaged the colony's economic prospects. It had also upset alliances between the French and other tribes. For many years, the Choctaw had been allies of the French, but Governor Étienne de Perrier, whose actions had started the Natchez Uprising, had also upset the alliance with the Choctaw. Perrier had named men he liked as tribal chiefs, and the tribe's real leaders did not like his interference. Bienville sought to improve the relationship between French settlers and the Choctaw on his return. Trouble with the Chickasaw. The Choctaw had long been enemies of the Chickasaw, who were allies and trading partners with the English. The English and French, who were longtime rivals, tried to control the relationship between the Choctaw and Chickasaw, each to their own advantage. The French knew that. If the Choctaw became allies with the Chickasaw, their loyalty could shift to the English. Additionally, the Chickasaw had taken in the few Natchez survivors who had escaped being killed or captured by the French. Bienville demanded the return of the Natchez to the French. When the Chickasaw refused, Bienville began a military campaign against them. The French paid the Choctaw to fight the Chickasaw. The English entered the conflict on the side of the Chickasaw by giving them weapons and supplies. The French conducted military campaigns against the Chickasaw for several years with very little success. By 1740, Bienville signed a peace treaty with the Chickasaw, but neither side had achieved a clear victory. Bienville's final departure. Bienville's only official term as governor of the colony ended without glory or the improvement of his reputation. At his own request, the French appointed a new governor, and Bienville departed Louisiana for France in 1743. Despite all the difficulties of his final years in the colony, Bienville certainly deserved the title Father of Louisiana. His older brother Iberville deserves the credit for leading the expedition that began the colony's first settlements. It was Bienville, however, who guided the colony in its most difficult early years, maintained a leadership role often without reward, and succeeded in founding New Orleans. The end of an era. Two more governors oversaw the final years of French royal control. Pierre-François de Rigaud, better known as the Marquis de Vaudreuil, was the governor who arrived to replace Bienville in 1743. During his 9-year tenure, term of office, Vaudreuil oversaw a peace settlement with the Chickasaw. Although New Orleans was still a rough frontier city, Vaudreuil and his wife tried to bring some of the lifestyle and glamour of Paris to the city. Madame Vaudreuil wore the latest French fashions, and the couple gave elaborate parties and balls that featured fine food, French wines, and French music and dancing. When Vaudreuil received the appointment to become governor of Canada in 1752, he arranged a grand party for the new governor of Louisiana. Unlike Vaudreuil, Louis Billouard, Chevalier de Kerlorec, the final governor of the French period, was appointed because of his experience as a military leader. This was important because the final years of France's dominance of Louisiana were overshadowed by growing tensions with England. Kerlorec's main priority was to strengthen the defenses of the colony before open warfare broke out between the French and English in North America. As with all other governors before him, Kerlorec had problems managing the colony. Kerlorec even requested to be relieved of his governorship. Despite those requests, he remained governor of Louisiana until a new power took control of the colony in the 1760s. During the colony's final years under French control, France went to war with England and, as in the past, was often unable or unwilling to provide enough goods and supplies to the colony. The colony had become a drain on the royal treasury, and life for the people in Louisiana continued to be hard. The economic system of mercantilism was a failure in Louisiana, and what replaced it, from the French perspective, was probably even worse. Without regular supplies from France, the colonists had to find other ways to get the goods they needed. Just as Saint Denis had done 40 years earlier, French colonists resorted to trading with Spanish and, when necessary, even with English traders. This established a pattern of ignoring official orders from France when those orders did not meet the colonists' needs. Some historians have called Louisiana a rogue, wayward, unlawful colony because of this pattern of illegal trade and ignoring dictates from France. Special feature, Natchitoches, the oldest city in Louisiana. Have you ever wondered which city in Louisiana is the oldest? The answer is Natchitoches, which celebrated its 300th birthday in 2014. Louis-Jules Charoux de Saint-Denis founded Natchitoches in 1714 as a trade outpost. Due to its good location on the Red River, Natchitoches became an important trade and farming center, surrounded by plantations. When the Louisiana Purchase was made in 1803, Natchitoches was the oldest city included in the territory. Today, Natchitoches is famous for more than just being the oldest city in Louisiana. Several movies have been filmed there, including The Horse Soldiers, 1959, and most famously Steel Magnolias, 1989. There is even a Walk of Honor in Natchitoches that has marble fleur-de-lis in the sidewalk to commemorate famous movie stars, athletes, and other people who have had a significant impact on the city. In addition to being a popular location for movies, Natchitoches hosts a famous Christmas festival every year that includes over 300,000 lights. If you visit Natchitoches today, there are plenty of opportunities to explore the city's history. In fact, there is a replica of the 1732 French Fort Saint-Jean-Baptiste, which will give you a look at how French soldiers lived during the colonial period. Natchitoches itself is one of only two National Landmark Historic Districts in Louisiana. Natchitoches is known as the bed and breakfast capital of Louisiana. There are over 35 bed and breakfast homes where you can stay while visiting the Landmark District, shopping, and eating the city's famous meat pies. After viewing the French-style architecture in the city, you can visit the Cane River Creole National Historic Park. Oakland Plantation and Magnolia Plantation are a part of the park and open to visitors. What do you think would be the most interesting thing to do in Natchitoches?